What is up, everyone? How are you doing? Welcome. It's good to have you here. My name is TIE Fighter, and this is Community Time Gaming, a community-driven podcast devoted to discussing the latest and greatest from the world of gaming. Not only are we going to talk about games, but you, the viewer, are going to have the opportunity to get involved, post comments live in chat during the stream, or call in the Discord in real time and let your voice be heard. Gaming is about doing things together, and this podcast is no different. If you can't make it to the live stream on Mixer, make sure you check out the show via YouTube at youtube.com/TIEFighterTV or any podcast service that you deem worthy. Let's jump in. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me here tonight. I just wanted to say sorry for earlier this week. So we did a full recording on Tuesday from start to finish, and you may have noticed that it was not present anywhere. You didn't see it on Spotify, or you didn't see it on Apple Podcasts, or you didn't see it on YouTube anywhere. Tuesday was kind of a bummer for me. So we were right in the middle of what was kind of the beginning opening section, kind of the first story. It was the biggest story of the night, talking about Fortnite getting sued by a number of people who felt that they needed to get paid for their dance moves. Obviously, that was a big story and a lot to discuss and a lot to dissect. And right when we got to kind of the meat and potatoes of it, Channel One, which is a large kind of viewer-centric channel on Mixer that randomly hosts a different partner every 15 minutes. That channel hosted Team TIE Fighter, mixer.com/TIE Fighter TV, right in the middle. And a lot of people watch Channel 1 because it gives you extra sparks, which are the currency for Mixer that allow you to interact with channels, allow you to use buttons and effects and all that sort of thing. People watch Channel 1 because you get extra sparks more so than you would watching any other channel. So there's a benefit to doing it, and then you also get kind of a good random sample of partners that are on the platform. So this is good for me because when Channel 1 comes in and hosts mixer.com/TIEFighterTV, it brings a lot of people with it. So I think on Tuesday it was something like 5,000 people were there. I think it was 4,900 and something was the biggest number that I saw there. And 9 times out of 10, I'm going to go as far as say 19 times out of 20, it causes no problems. My bots are happy. My stream is happy. Everything is good and gravy. When they came in and hosted the channel on Tuesday, and it's likely that they could do it again today, but I feel like my OBS is happier. But when they came in on Tuesday, it wrecked the stream. Like, it shut down. All the recordings were broken. I had told myself I was going to record the podcast using Audacity on top of getting the recording from OBS. The problem is that the Audacity recording doesn't listen to Discord. And since we had a couple people call in on Tuesday, their voices weren't recorded in any way, shape, or form. So the audio recording that I had separate from OBS was trash because you could only hear my voice and you couldn't hear who I was talking to, which I feel defeats the purpose of the podcast. Nor were you able to watch the stream and or pull the audio from the recording because the recording was broke because the stream broke. And I was super bummed. So basically we lost every bit of what that podcast was. The only thing that remains is kind of the second half of it on the stream recording that I was finally able to get running when I switched from Streamlabs OBS over to OBS Studio, which is a different version of online broadcasting software. It is more stable, at least in my understanding, it's more stable, but it doesn't have a lot of the features that Streamlabs OBS has that I use a lot, like the chat feature that if you're watching the video right now, you can see that the chat is on screen and I can see what you guys are doing. It is integrated into the program and it helps a lot. If you are listening via podcast, you obviously cannot see what I'm talking about, but just know that the Streamlabs version of the software that is required in order to stream to Mixer, the Streamlabs version, a little bit less stable, but significantly, you know, air quotes, nicer. It's better. It has more fun features to it. So anyway, thank you so much for everyone who's here, for everyone who's listening, for stuck with me for what ended up being like a week and a half off. Was it? I think it was a week and a half, 2 weeks off, because Tuesday, I guess, was kind of my first one back after a while because I took like a week off because of Destiny. Destiny kind of really got its hooks in my body and pulled me in so tight that it made it so I didn't have time to do anything else because I was on that raid grind. I told myself when the expansion, Black Army expansion, came out on that particular Tuesday, the raid came out on that particular Friday, and I wanted to be ready for it like day one. And so I grinded and grinded and grinded, and it was hours and hours and hours. I ended up spending 35 hours playing Destiny that week, which is a vastly greater amount of hours playing a game per week, playing any game during the week, let alone the same game over and over. So I was just grinding, trying to get there. And unfortunately, even after all that, I was still significantly underleveled, and everyone on our team was significantly underleveled, and we did not get there. So I actually still haven't beaten that raid, but honestly, once the reset happened, and I was like, it was like past the deadline to get the first to complete jacket that we were all looking for, it felt a little bit less meaningful, and so the grind slowed way down. I'm only playing Destiny like twice this week, and it's only for kind of a casual amount of time. I'm taking a little, I don't want to say a breather, because I still played on Tuesday, and I'm still going to play on Saturday, but just like I pumped the brakes like big time on Destiny this week, and we're trying other stuff. For example, I'm going to be playing Spider-Man tonight on PS4. This is the first PS4 game that I've played ever. This is the first time I've owned a PlayStation 4. I think I've played on it once. I haven't played on any PlayStation, not consistently, since PlayStation 3. So this is a big deal. Anyway, hello to Power Toast, man. Good to have you here, man. That is a great segue into what will be our first story for tonight. Insomniac Games is adding what they're calling the, quote, Raimi suit to Spider-Man the game as a holiday gift. So it was kind of blatantly obvious that the Spider-Man game did not have the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, a.k.a. the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies. Their suit is unique, and they did not have that suit in the Spider-Man game. And so, just as a quick note, this is from Andrew Reiner at Insomniac. Insomniac Games just delivered a great holiday gift for Spider-Man fans. The suit worn by Tobey Maguire in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man film trilogy is available today as a free download in Spider-Man. Fans were dismayed that this popular suit wasn't included in the core game, and again, voiced frustration over it not appearing in The City That Never Sleeps DLC. We don't know if there were any licensing hurdles that prevented it from being released earlier, or if Insomniac just wanted to give it away as a free holiday gift. But we can all be thankful that it's finally here, and we no longer need to see GIFs of Tobey Maguire crying on Twitter. Wait, hold that thought. Why isn't the black Raimi suit in the game yet? Insomniac, grr. All right, so this brings up kind of another point, and I don't have the news story here to show this, but apparently there was just, pardon my French, there was a shitstorm of people who were so upset that the Sam Raimi suit for Spider-Man wasn't in the game. There are like 30 suits for Spider-Man in this game, including like everything you can think of for Spider-Man, from OG Spider-Man to comic book Spider-Man to black and white Spider-Man to Iron Man, Tony Stark suit Iron Man, and everything in between. Like, everything is there. And so why people get so angry, so upset, and so frustrated with the developer over the missing of one suit, I don't understand. It just seems like so much rage over something that initially gave people so much joy and so much happiness. It just seems so weird. Thank you for everyone in chat. It's good to see you guys. Look at all the sparks. I love it. It's great. Thank you so much, Foss. But anyway, yeah, so apparently it became very clear to kind of those of us that pay attention that the reason that the Raimi suit wasn't in the original release, it wasn't in the first DLC or the second DLC, wasn't because they were holding out. It wasn't because they were waiting or trying to dangle it on a hook at the end of a string for us. It was literally they had to work with Sony. Sony owns the rights to these Spider-Man, you know, IPs. And so, I mean, intellectual property. And this particular suit is the intellectual property of Sony. So Insomniac had to work with Sony in order to get the rights to use this suit in their game, because this suit is unique to that Spider-Man. So anyway, I'm glad they finally made it. I'm sad that people were so mad about it not being in the initial release. It's not like you didn't have a bunch of suits already. Redonkulous. Oh well, moving on. Before we move on to the next story, I'm going to address chat here in Mixer. Fossassin X Bullet just came in and dropped like a bajillion sparks, which are definitely supporting the stream, and I love you, and you're great. And when we get to the end of this podcast recording, I'm going to thank you even more. But for right now, you're awesome. Next story. Assassin's Creed is coming to For Honor. So this was something that they teased yesterday, i.e. Today's Thursday. So on Wednesday, December 19th, they teased it. And so this is from IGN. For Honor, for 3 weeks, will be taken over by Assassin's Creed thanks to the For the Creed crossover event featuring characters, themes, music, and more from the long-running franchise. Revealed during the For Honor Warriors Den livestream, the For the Creed crossover event will run from today, December 20th, through January 10th, 2019. This limited time event will feature characters such as Ezio Auditore and Cesare Borgia as commanders. The soldiers will be dressed up as either Templars, which are the knights, assassins, which are the samurai, or pirates, which are the Vikings. I feel like they kind of struggled for that last one because Assassin's Creed is always just the Templars and the assassins, and they're kind of pirates in Assassin's Creed 4, but I feel like pirates is kind of a stretch. Anyway, music from the franchise will appear throughout the game. Themed menus and maps will replace the standard ones and much, much more. The three maps, Citadel Gate, River Fort, and Beachhead, will be taken over by Assassin's Creed and will feature Easter eggs from the series like the traditional out-of-bounds markers, glitches from the Animus, and even the glass pyramid that was featured in Assassin's Creed Origins. In addition to being able to unlock gear and costumes from Assassin's Creed, there will be three weekly arcade adventures that will have special challenges based on certain games, with the first being tied to Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And there is much, much more. I think this is really cool. This is not something that I would consider a true shock or surprise, as it is not the first time we've seen Ubisoft kind of cross-promote their own games. There have been examples of this before, so you think of Rainbow Six Siege operators showing up in Tom Clancy's Wildlands. This happened over the summer. I think we actually also saw Splinter Cell show up in Wildlands. So it's clear that Ubisoft has really no problem with allowing the developers of its IP to cross over their stuff in hopes of promoting both at the same time through a single event. So we know that Assassin's Creed is very popular right now, with no small thanks to Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which has been a very successful launch and release, and actually successful follow-up content as well. I'm excited to jump into that one. I picked it up for Black Friday, and it is sitting on my shelf because I have so many other great games to play. But I picked it up because it was cheap, and I knew it probably wasn't going to be that cheap again for quite some time. So I will get there. I love Greek mythology, and I think being able to interact with it as an assassin is going to be super cool. I haven't played Assassin's Creed all the way through since Black Flag, I think, was the last time I beat an Assassin's Creed game. So that'll be a lot of fun. And then For Honor is definitely another one of the Ubisoft success stories, in that it started off really piss poor. They had this amazing marketing campaign leading up to its release, and everyone was very excited for it. And then it dropped, and there was just so many issues with it, so many problems, so many negative things surrounding its release. And a lot of the people that initially were excited for it ended up leaving. But Ubisoft stuck to their newest mantra, which is don't let good games die. I don't know if that's their mantra, but that's what they've been doing. I just made that up. But don't let good games die, which basically means if they believe that a game has the potentiality of becoming good, then they will stick with it and they will keep putting work into it and keep adding patches and adding content. And they've absolutely done that with For Honor, and this is a really great example of that. This is also, in addition to, I think, Marching Fire is the name of the most recent expansion, which added more warriors and more different types of content for people to play and better server stability and all this great stuff. So I picked up For Honor as a game with gold, I think, in August. So it's definitely possible that at some point I'm going to jump in. I don't know if I'm going to get to it over Christmas break. Just as a little quick side note, this is going to be, once again, the last podcast for a little while. I am going to be gone all of next week. This is the week of Christmas, so the 25th, which is a Monday. Sorry. Yes. The 25th is a Tuesday, and I will be gone from the Tuesday through the Sunday following it, because I'm going to be in the northern part of Idaho where my family lives, so I'm going to go see them and say hello. So this will be the last podcast of December for me, and so by the time this event gets close to ending, I'm not going to have that much time to play everything else. So I probably won't get to this event, but I definitely am happy that I own For Honor and can at some point jump back in. So moving on to the next story. Razer, this is the company that specializes in like PC peripherals, mouse and keyboards and speakers and headphones and mouse pads and everything you can think of. They have a deal with Microsoft, and they are in charge of the first licensed mouse and keyboard for Xbox. And we knew that it was going to be Razer. They announced that Razer was going to be in charge of the creation of this licensed content, or I shouldn't say content, but licensed product. And today we got our first look at it. Actually, it was yesterday we got our first look at it. This is from The Verge at Tom Warren. And he shows us pictures of what Razer released. We finally have a look at what this... It is a mechanical keyboard and it is a wireless mouse. And they say it is made specifically for the Xbox. And so when I clicked on the article and they said, they made this just for Xbox, I didn't really know what a keyboard made just for Xbox looks like. But we have a look at it and it looks pretty good. It's obviously RGB on the keyboard. The keyboard has been made wider and taller for the benefit of being able to sit in your lap, making it easier to type while it sits in your lap. And then the keyboard also has an extendable platform on the right side so that you can set the mouse on this platform and have a mouse pad basically wherever you are sitting. So this particular keyboard is made to sit, you know, on your side table next to your couch so that when you're on your couch, you can just reach over and grab your keyboard and pull out that little platform on the right side and then use your mouse and keyboard there. And that can be how you interact with your Xbox, because as you know, Xbox is now officially keyboard and mouse certified, and some games, including Warframe and a couple others, are now KBM supported. So that's very cool. I haven't seen a lot of like major AAA titles outside of Warframe come out and say like, oh, hey, we have servers specifically dedicated to KBM players. I know there's a lot of worry that KBM players will overtake controller players on console, which is a little bit frustrating considering the quote-unquote advantage that keyboard and mouse users have for precision games like shooters. But I think that's a problem we're going to have to solve at a different day. I'm just excited to see this keyboard come out and look good. The only problem is the price tag. So I'm going to read this for you, and you can make your own assumption on whether it's too much or not. But Razer has officially unveiled pricing for its keyboard and mouse set for the Xbox One. Dubbed the Razer Turret, it is the first wireless keyboard and mouse for Microsoft's consoles, and it includes Razer's Chroma lighting support. The Turret works over a 2.4 GHz wireless connection via a dongle, and Razer claims the battery life to be up to 40 hours. Razer is pricing the Turret at $249.99, a premium price considering an Xbox One S now supports any, or sorry, the Xbox One supports any keyboard and mouse. I said Xbox One S because an Xbox One S is literally cheaper than the keyboard and mouse that you would use to control it. It's a big old shrug, big old oof on my end. It's $249 is a lot of dollars. $250 for a mouse and keyboard, that seems like a lot. Especially, like it says, especially considering it supports any keyboard and mouse. Ooh, that's rough. So what we do know, Razer's keyboard includes mechanical switches. There's also an Xbox button to navigate the home interface on the Xbox One dashboard. Razer also included a palm rest that is adjustable. The mouse for the Xbox One is based on the company's wireless Razer Mamba. Razer is planning to release the Turret in Q1 2019, and pre-orders are beginning today, aka yesterday the 19th, in the Microsoft store for $250. Microsoft lists the Razer Turret for delivery in March. And then it goes on. It's got more pictures. They look very nice. If you want to check it out, there's a great article on The Verge. It's called Razer's Keyboard and Mouse for the Xbox One is $249 and arrives in March by Tom Warren. Go check it out. It's great. And if anyone ever wants these links, please feel free to hit me up directly. So that's a lot of money. Powder Toastman says that's moderately dope. Does it have a moderately dope price point? Oof, there it goes. See ya. Sweet Christmas. So it could be a cool Christmas present if that's all your family got for Christmas. But for now, It is cool to see that it exists, and it is cool to see that it has an Xbox button. That is a unique feature. There will be no other keyboards that have an Xbox button. But wow, $250 that's a lot of dollars. So anyway, moving on. We got a nice little update from Xbox today. Good old Major Nelson, a.k.a. Larry Herb of Xbox fame, released the January Games with Gold today, and we came with one very specific and very awesome inclusion. Celeste, a.k.a. Game of the Year nominee, a.k.a. Indie Game of the Year, a.k.a. winner of the Game for Impact Award for the Game Awards. Celeste is going to be free for all Xbox users. Sorry, free for all Xbox Live users from January 1st through January 31st. And that's not just free to play, that's free to own. Starting January 1st through January 31st. I was blown away by this. Now, there are other games here. WRC 6, Lara Croft's Guardians of the Light, I think that one's called, and then Far Cry 2. But Celeste is really the headliner of this, being the nominee for Game of the Year. It's super surprising. I can't believe they were able to negotiate this so quickly. I wonder if this negotiation finished before it was released that Celeste was going to be Game of the Year. I'm not sure. We'll see. GT Bangarang says, "Oof, I'd rather get a Switch." You'd rather get a Switch than you must mean the keyboard and mouse. It's super expensive, yeah. Toastman says, "I meant that more in a sweet merciful Christ kind of way. $250 for a keyboard when I can plug in literally any keyboard." Yeah, no thank you. Stargaze says, great sale going on at Gamefly.com based on their used games. Used games comes with all codes that originally shipped with the game. Nice. Yeah, Gamefly is actually a really great place to buy used games. A really great place. The only issue that some people have is that you are buying the physical copy of the game. You are getting the disc. However, you are not getting the box. And I know, like, for me, I'm not too worried about the vanity of it. But I would definitely assume that there are many who would be turned off by not having the box, like, fit perfectly into your shelf. So that's just something to consider. Hello, everyone who just came into the chat. It's good to have you. Crash says, they send the box and the codes. Always. Oh, you know what I'm thinking of? Strike everything that I just said. Let's go backwards, like, a minute and a half. They're not the ones that don't send you the box. It's Redbox that doesn't give you the box. You can buy used games from Redbox, and you only get the Redbox case. Gamefly does send you the case. Good. That's true. All right, so there you go. Go to Gamefly, buy used games, get them for cheap, get them quick. That could be pretty cool. And then like Stargaze says, used games come with all the codes that originally shipped with the game, and that's because Gamefly just doesn't use them. I assume they when they buy games in bulk, they buy them just like you would go buy a game with, you know, in the box, and then before they ship it out to you, they just take it out of the box, and they put it in the sleeve, and they set the box off to the side so that later, when they're done using it, they can take it out of the sleeve, put it back in the box, and then ship it to you. So the box is it's probably in pretty good shape. So there you go. I just got my Gamefly and my Redbox mixed up. According to Crash, Fallout 76 is already at a casual $26. Bangarang says, Celeste is a really super sweet game. A nice little indie title. I was torn between this and The Messenger being the best indie games that came out this year. Just my two cents. So, one thing that I need to do at some point, I don't know when it's going to be. It's not going to be soon. But at some point, I need to play The Messenger, and I need to play, what was the other one that came out that was much like The Messenger? Is the other ninja indie title that came out. Help me out. We'll get there. It was a Messenger. And it was another indie title. It was up for Indie of the Year, and I can't remember what it was. Let's see. I'm super torn, guys. And now I feel bad that I don't remember what the name of this one is. Do I have it on my... No, I don't have... Oh, here it is. I have it on my Game Awards notes here. This is the quality... Oh, Dead Cells. That's the name of what it was. Dead Cells. Might not even be a ninja game, but that's what I remember it being. So I need to play The Messenger and I need to play Game Cells because they both kind of occupy the same niche in my brain. I kind of feel like very similar style game, but that's because I haven't played them. I need to play them and figure out what's different about them. But, Bangarang, it's really good that you're happy with the, both of those titles. I think they definitely both deserve recognition. I think them both being recognized for being solid indie titles, capable of winning Indie of the Year, is very indicative of their quality. A lot of people were talking about them throughout the year. I don't think their quality is being overlooked. So that's good. So, Stargaze asks, when am I going away for Christmas? I am leaving on Christmas Day to go away for Christmas. However, I will not be streaming on Christmas Eve because I will be with my family and working most of that day. So, Stargaze also mentioned, if you didn't play Titanfall 2, you can also get it for a sweet $6.99. I actually have a story about Titanfall here in just a moment. We'll talk about it even more. But anyway, those are your January Games with Gold. If you aren't already, make sure you hop into Xbox Live and get access to those, because Games with Gold, while sometimes it can be a little disappointing, there are other months where they come in and give you some dope games, basically for free. So, it's really good. All right, next story we got, Xbox All Access ending December 31st, returning, quote, later 2019. So this is a story from Polygon, Charlie Hall from Polygon. This summer, Microsoft unveiled a novel new subscription program called Xbox All Access. For as low as $21.99 per month, customers could get their own Xbox One, along with access to over 100 games. Today, Microsoft reaffirmed that sales of the subscription will end on December 31st. That is 11 days from today. And said the promotion will return in a revised format sometime in 2019. In case you were wondering, said Xbox spokesperson Larry Herb, adding color to the announcement today in a tweet, the program will be expanding in 2019. Stay tuned for more. In an email, Microsoft representative said the company will be, quote, bringing it to even more gamers next year. Xbox All Access arrived in the scene in August, just in time for the beginning of the school year and the busy collegiate shopping season. Plans start at just $21.99 per month, which included an Xbox One S, Xbox Live Gold, and Xbox Game Pass. For $34.99, consumers could also upgrade to the Xbox One X. Subscriptions last for 24 months and you get to keep the hardware when it's all over. So it was a really smoking deal, and we talked about this on the Hardcore Casuals Lounge podcast. I think we had a good long conversation about it between Manny, myself, and Buddha. This was a really cool deal, and you ended up saving a lot of money if you were to have bought all those things at their full price. So if you were to buy an Xbox One S, and if you were to buy 2 years of Game Pass, and if you were to buy 2 years of Xbox Live Gold at full price, you would have saved a bunch of money. You would have saved even more money if you had bought the Xbox One X and those things, because of the total that you would have ended up paying, and I don't have the math in front of me, but you were saving a bunch of money if you were going to do it that way. Now, the argument could be made that no one buys those things at full price. So, like, I never buy my Xbox Live Gold at full price. I always get it on sale. I never buy my Game Pass at full price. I always get it on sale. For those that don't have access to those sales, or maybe those that like buying things ahead of time, that could have been a really cool thing. So if you want to do this, you still have the opportunity. If you're listening to this now before December 31st, there's still time. It stops on the 31st, and it will come back, you know, quote, soon, sometime later in 2019, and it will be probably augmented, maybe even better. They say they're going to reach more people, which tells me that they're looking to expand its availability somehow. Maybe they're even lowering the price, so we'll see. That could be very interesting. Stargate says, we need to get you a TIE Fighter desk to do the news from. Yeah, I'll sit back here, you know, like this, and then I'll try and fashion some sort of graphic that I can put on the green screen behind me, so that instead of looking at my computer desktop, you can actually look at a newsroom, and then I can make my Google Doc kind of appear beside me like a news person would, because they're better at this than I am. GT Bangarang says, the studio that makes Titanfall posted on making the upcoming sequel. Titanfall 3 is happening. Gonna be great. I hope, like the last two, would love a trilogy of games that are all solid. You know, Bangarang, it's funny you mentioned that, because look at the next story right here. Respawn is recruiting for Titanfall 3. This is via PC Gamer Sean Prescott. Nice job, Bangarang, by the way. New job listings point to a game in the early stages of development. In an October earnings call, Electronic Arts CEO Andrew Wilson made it pretty clear that Respawn is working on not one, but two new games at present. One of those is the studio's forthcoming Star Wars shooter. The other, Tom speculated at the time, could be a new installment in the Titanfall series. According to a bunch of job listings Respawn has posted, a new Titanfall game seems pretty bloody likely. The studio has been posting Titanfall-related jobs for the better part of a year, and most of them originally appeared long after any new major Titanfall 2 content update. The last, so far as I can see, was in December 2017. Unless Respawn is preparing a doozy of an unexpected Titanfall 2 update, it's safe to say these listings relate to a new game. So, very exciting. Very cool. Titanfall 2 is another one that I bought because it was super cheap. I think I bought Titanfall 2 for $4. That sounds right. I think it was like $4 or $5 that I got it for. And I still haven't done the single player campaign. And 100% of the people that I deal with that find out that I haven't yet played Titanfall 2 campaign tell me that I need to play the Titanfall 2 campaign. 100% of the people. I know. It's good. I'm very excited to try it. And once I get there, I know I'm going to enjoy it. I'm very excited. So it's going to be a good time. We'll get there. I promise. For those that watch stream, we're going to get there. As you may have noticed over the past month, I've been doing my best to try and increase the variety of the stream, aka going into PlayStation games, going into games like Gears of War. I know I play a lot of Destiny. I know it's frustrating, but Destiny's so good and I love it so much. And I'm sure you'll see more of that in the months to come. So I will get there. And Titanfall 2 is absolutely on the list of ones that I will make time for, so that's good. Sergey says, did you see that they had Matt Damon wear a hat like yours in the promo shot for SNL? I think I may have had something to do with it. Was he wearing a TIE Fighter hat? I don't know, man. R56 Cooper S11 says, I just hope they avoid the big release schedules with this one. Dude, tell me about it. So for those who missed it, Titanfall 2 came out right in the middle of a Call of Duty and a Battlefield 1, like literally at the same time. EA, who runs both Battlefield and Titanfall, said, you know what would be really cool is if we release Battlefield 1, but then also at the same time, this other shooter by a lesser known developer. Now, I'm not saying Respawn is not known. They're very well known for Titanfall 1, which was pretty good. But if you're a consumer and you're trying to decide between, oh, the Battlefield franchise by DICE, which goes back, you know, half a dozen or more games, or the sequel to a game that did moderately okay, which one are you going to choose? You're probably going to choose Battlefield, and most people did. Battlefield 1 sold very well. Titanfall 2, which came out within a week or two. It was very, very close. Did not do so well. So kind of a bummer there. The developers really seem to have gotten shafted considering the overwhelmingly positive support for Titanfall 2, especially that it's gotten post-launch and kind of the cult following that that campaign has. I know the multiplayer is probably pretty darn good from what I've heard, but everyone says, but the single player, it's really good. So I got to check that out. Darkest Moon said something really nice. He says, we come to see the charismatic person regardless of the games, man. Those are just the topping on the cake. That was really nice of you to say, man. Thank you so much. That's really cool. I appreciate that. Finally, we have one more story today. We're finishing a little bit quicker than normal, but I think that's okay, unless I just totally ramble about this one. But I digress. Ladies and gentlemen, via Polygon once more, our final story for the night. Halo Infinite Early Access details emerge in developer live stream. This is from Austin Goslin at Polygon, as I mentioned. Fans will get the chance to play the game before its official release and even help influence the development process. Halo Infinite, the next installment in Microsoft's flagship first-person shooter series, is still mostly a mystery for fans. Outside of the game's initial reveal, which was really just an engine teaser from E3 earlier this year, there are almost no details on when the game will be released or what exactly it even is. However, in a live stream on Wednesday afternoon, developer 343 Industries did give fans a little bit more information on the game, including an early access period when fans can play the game and offer feedback for developers. Called a flighting program, it will start with just a handful of players and grow from there. Different layers of the community will be able to play the game at different stages of development, 343 Community Director Brian Gerard said during the stream. The studio's FPS head, Chris Lee, gave a little more detail on what the process would mean for the game. The flighting program isn't like a beta, where it's a moment in time on Halo 5, like we had for a couple of weeks. We want to have a relationship, and we want to build that over time. We can have people coming, giving us feedback, and playing experiences, and we can update it as we go. As for when we can try Halo Infinite, 343 Industries was careful to note that there isn't a date set for the flighting program yet. However, the team says that players will be able to opt in, quote, soon, so that they might be able to select when it officially begins. And more information goes on from there. So, very exciting, very interesting. A part of me is torn on this one. A part of me is like, oh, it's great. Information on this as soon as we can, sooner rather than later. I want to dive in. You know, we've been waiting for a Halo for a long time. And the other part of me is like, I have a really hard time from a personal standpoint jumping into games early. And I know it's exciting to help the developers build the game, but they're a lot better at it than I am. And I have a great deal of trust in their ability to create a good game. And I definitely want that feeling of the fresh experience. I want to go into that game on day one when it is at its perfect form, and I want to see it for all that they've created. I don't want to see it when it's a little baby and unformed and grotesque and not complete, and then kind of watch it grow. Because then when you finally see the completed product, you're like, oh yeah, I mean, I've seen this already. I've seen the skeleton here. I've seen the bare bones and the muscles and the blood vessels, and I know what's going on underneath. And so I feel like that almost kind of taints the final product to a degree, because you don't get that like big, flashy, fresh experience that you would otherwise. So I don't know. I'm sure there are some people that will literally be the first to sign up for this not beta, the flighting program. And they'll have a wonderful time helping the developers through this process. However, like for me, like even with Anthem, like I've made videos about Anthem. I'm following Anthem every step of the way. I'm watching all the live streams that they're releasing, but I didn't get into their alpha test. I shouldn't say I'm not going to, but I'm like really torn about whether to try out the demo that's coming out a month beforehand. I just don't know. Like I'm torn because I want to have the freshest, biggest, boldest experience with that game. And oh, it's tough. So yes, it is Stargate. So anyway, we have Bolt Striker here that wants to talk about his thoughts on Halo before we finish up. So let me see if I can drag him in here. Bolt Striker, there you are. You are on. Tell me what you think, my brother.
Finally, we get a Halo game after a long time.
I know. It's pretty cool, right?
Yes.
So what do you think? Finally, are you going to be part of the team that joins the flighting program?
The flighting program? No. I'd rather be not spoiled or anything. And because I want to feel the mechanics like they do when like before, you know? And
okay.
And I think that it's finally good that we're finally having a Halo game. Because, you know, I mean, it's been so long since we had one.
Sure. Okay, so what are you excited to see in Infinite? Like, what was a part of Halo 5 that you really enjoyed that you're hoping they bring back?
More of what happened to Cortana at the ending.
Okay. I need to do a catch-up because I haven't played Halo since, I think, Reach. I think that Reach was the last one that I played. So I need to I need to do a catch-up.
Yeah, I definitely watch YouTube, and I go to YouTube, watch a little bit of the Halo movies.
They have movies on YouTube?
Yes, Gamer's Little Playground.
Okay.
I think it's the YouTube channel.
Okay.
They have Halo 4 and Halo 5.
Okay, good to know.
So.
All right, yep. Well, we will see. So, I mean, obviously this doesn't tell us anything about when it's going to be released. It doesn't tell us really much anything about what even the game's going to be, but we will see. But good to hear that you're excited, man.
Yes, I really am. The last Halo game that I played was Halo 4.
Okay, so it's been a while for you. So why don't you play Halo 5 in the meantime?
I don't know. There's just something about Spartan Locke that sort of throws me off. I mean, it's good that we have Buck back and everything from ODST. But there's just something about Locke that sort of throws me off.
Well, maybe there's a bunch of Cortana information that you might have missed by the movies and you need to play the game to catch.
I think I may, but I would say the one game that has gotten me into Halo was Halo 3.
Okay, that makes sense. Halo 3 was a big favorite. I think Halo 3 may have been the first one that I played because that's the one that I got with my Xbox 360 when I got that the senior year of high school.
Same.
Yep, that was mine. So, anyway, it'll be cool. I'm excited to see what they give us. I remember being in the Xbox auditorium when they showed that trailer for the first time at E3, and that was definitely one of the more hype moments of that show. So this is gonna be very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much.
Certainly. Thank you.
All right, but we'll talk to you soon.
Yep.
All right. So there you have it, guys. So we have a couple of comments here in chat. Fossassin, I'm going to actually go roll back up here. He says, I hope it's better than Halo 4 and 5. They weren't that great, to be honest. Disappointed me tremendously. What about Halo 4 and 5 had you disappointed? Because, I mean, they were full-scale AAA games. They had very successful multiplayer online stuff. Like, what was it that you were looking for that you didn't feel like you got? Stargaze says that he expects a Battle Royale. I don't know why you wouldn't expect a Battle Royale. I think that BRs are absolutely, like, they're the next team deathmatch, right? They're just going to be part of the whole. It's not going to be Halo BR and that's it. It is going to be a piece of the puzzle, very similar to how Blackout is a piece of the Call of Duty puzzle right now. But they will still have team deathmatch. They'll still have King of the Hill and all the other fun modes that Halo has right now. But I think it'll be an addition to that. Stargaze says ODST is his favorite. Crash says that Reach was his favorite. Stargaze mentions the great atmosphere, best stories, incredible music. Interesting that the best stories come from a offshoot of the Halo story. So that's super interesting. Fossassin, in reference to why he didn't like 4 and 5 quite as much, he said the online was pretty decent. I just wasn't a fan of the story in Halo 5. Just didn't grab me like the original games. Halo 2 was my first. Interesting. Bangarang says, I just finished that campaign. I enjoyed that I paid the $5 for it. I'm just happy I won't have to play it again. I found it odd, not terrible. Interesting. So we had a lot of conflicting ideas, mostly actually relatively negative about Halo. But I think at some point I'm going to need to go through the campaigns for 4 and 5 just so I know what's going on with the story. How you doing, Shadow Clown? What's going on, man? So anyway, that is all I had to talk about today. Today was a much smoother episode. Thankfully, it went well. No technical issues today, which is good. So for everyone who's listening via podcast, thank you for sticking with me over what was an extended break from the podcast. I didn't want it to be that way. We were supposed to be back on Tuesday, and that was total borkage. But if you feel like you're enjoying these, if you are watching these on YouTube, if you're listening to these on podcasts, please feel free to share it with your friends. I would love it for even more people to show up. I believe the show is already growing to a degree, which is good. But if you'd like to participate more in the creation of the show, it is called Community Time Gaming for a reason. We want to make sure that as many people as possible are participating here in chat. The more voices that we have in chat, the more we can make it a conversation, which is great. If you want to be on the voice calls, if you'd like to join in like our good friend Boltstriker did just now, I welcome that as well. Like I mentioned in the intro, this is community-driven, and if you'd like to call in and be a part of the conversation on Discord, I wholly and completely suggest that you jump into what is our lobby voice channel on the Discord. And if you'd like to join the Discord right now, you can just type in discord.io/teamtiefighter, and it will take you straight there. Even if you don't have the app, it will tell you to download the app, and it will take you straight to that channel. The app is free if you want to join in. That is where everyone within the TIE Fighter community resides, at discord.io/teamtiefighter. It's a good time. But for now, that is all I have for this episode. Anyway, thank you everyone for being a part of this. I'm going to cut the recording for the audio's sake. We will continue the stream. If you would like to be a part of the live stream, I'm on Mixer at 8 p.m. Eastern every weeknight, and then sometimes on weekends. I will post that schedule always on Discord and such. So anyway, thank you guys for listening to the podcast. I will see you very soon. Have a great one. Peace.